On today's webcast on wideshut.co.uk, I want to address the believers of the Hampstead satanic cult allegations directly. I've got several important questions for you. So if you believe the stories that were uploaded onto YouTube and shared all over social media, and you think they were true, there are some things that I would like you to answer.
And now, it's the Wide Shut webcast.
So where are we in terms of the status of this Hampstead case? Well, a judge has pored over all of the evidence in a fact-finding hearing, and she concludes that there is no basis for the allegations in the original videos. However, there is very strong evidence, as I reported as soon as Sabine McNeil leaked various documentation onto the internet incriminating those she was trying to, I guess, protect. There is very strong evidence that Ella Draper, the mother, and Abraham Christie, her partner, were violent and abusive towards the children themselves. Now, there are a small group of people who I want to address today who do not accept the judgment, who have been protesting outside the church near the school and essentially harassing anyone attending church service. You can see the video online. They're quite proud of their actions, shouting at random people, accusing them of being Satanists and abusers. And this dovetails quite nicely into the list of questions that those believers should probably answer, since they're so confident that the allegations are true. They shouldn't have a hard time engaging rationally with these points, because if a claim is true, it will hold up to scrutiny. So let's see if it actually does. Let's dive in headfirst into this. Number one, why do you fully believe the allegations in the videos? It's one thing to say you believe the case wasn't handled very well by the police and it merits further investigation. I actually do think the police closed the case a bit too quickly and failed to follow up on certain leads. I believe now there's enough evidence to convict Abraham Christie of violent acts, what with the bruises, with the children's testimony that he hit them, with third parties previously reporting his aggressiveness towards them. So the position that the police investigation should continue is a rather sound position to take. But it would seem that there are some people out there that fully believe a satanic cult has its grips over the local community there in Hampstead. Yet at the same time, those people claim that there has been no proper investigation into the allegations. And they say the people that were accused need to show off their tattoos, they need to be rounded up and stripped off, and police need to raid the school, and we need to pester people outside of the church because they're clearly Satanists going into a church, and over 100 people need to be brought in for questioning. If that's your line of argument, then you're admitting that you believe something without any evidence. Because if there was no investigation and therefore no evidence, why do you believe? Your belief in the allegations began the moment you saw the videos. Your belief in the allegations are based solely on those videos and the claims of the mother. You made up your mind first. You see, if these people were being genuine, the only logical position they could actually take is, I think there should be more of an investigation. But that's not the position of most of these campaigners. Their position is it's all true. I could see in children's eyes that they were telling the truth. What is that based on? Their spidey senses? As a mother, I can tell there's no way they were lying. Yeah, nice scientific methodology there. And this is really the core of the whole issue. You already believe, and you think the fact that the police haven't come back with any evidence to support your preconceived belief, it's a cover-up. You've got it completely back to front. How can you categorically state that it was true with no evidence? What proof was there for you to believe in the beginning? A YouTube video? You had a gut feeling? Yeah, that's not how this works, folks. So question one, Why do you believe something without any evidence? And if you think the police didn't do an investigation, why is your position that it's all true instead of the police should do an investigation? Question 2. How can the children articulate such complex and detailed stories on their own? Answer me that. How? How could they verbalize all of this information? It has been argued that the children's allegations are so elaborate and detailed that they simply cannot be making them up. That makes no sense. How does detail prove truth? A judge doesn't sit in a court and say, oh, you've got 55,000 pages of accusations. Well, there's a lot of detail here. It must be true. You're guilty. Please explain, with some semblance of logic, what you mean by that argument. And I think I do kind of see the line of thinking that the believers are using when they make this argument, but they've got it completely twisted that it makes no sense. What they mean to say is, how can the children verbalize such things if they haven't really experienced those things? It's not something that just pops into a child's head out of nowhere. But still, take a step back and really think what that means. It still doesn't make any sense. Even if the allegations were true, they still wouldn't know how to describe exactly what happened to them. They still wouldn't be able to remember and regurgitate all of this elaborate detail, all of the people involved, all of the gruesomeness that is alleged to have happened. That's why in normal cases, social workers and other experts are brought in to interview children, because they have a tough time verbalizing what happened to them. They don't have the vocabulary that adults do. The elaborate and detailed nature of the allegations isn't a sign of truth. It's a sign that adults have dictated to them what to say, have verbally introduced the themes and words to describe what happened. And often this method of coaching comes from a genuine place, a genuine yearning to get to the bottom of what the children are saying. But it's still coaching, and it's still resulted in lots and lots of false allegations in many, many cases spanning decades. It's usually the social workers that end up being guilty of coaching. In this case, it's the mother and the partner. After the satanic panic in the 80s and 90s, social workers were taught to be extremely careful not to introduce ideas to children during interviews and then reward them for giving answers that they want to hear. And this is not always done maliciously or because people have ulterior motives. It's just the nature of the adult authority and the child who wants to please them. And the independent expert that was actually called by the mother as part of the submission for judicial review, which again Sabine McNeil leaked online, this former policewoman even says that that's what she thinks has happened. That in the beginning, Abraham Christie twisted some things that the girl was saying to him, and because she wanted to please him, you know, do the right thing, you look to adults as the purveyors of what you're supposed to do, so you follow their lead. So she continued to tell him what he wanted to hear. And that's the opinion of the person that the mother and Sabine McNeil and all these fake legal advisors called to review the case. They don't even realise when so-called evidence they've leaked doesn't even support them. So I repeat the question to those that believe all this is true. How can the children articulate such elaborate and detailed concepts without those concepts being verbally introduced to them by adults and repeated until they have the story straight? How? It's coaching. It's coercion. These children aren't Rain Man. They have been given a script to repeat. And this brings me to question 3. If you believe the children couldn't possibly have been coerced or coached for the original videos, why are you so quick to claim the police coerced and coached them to retract the original allegations? Isn't that a massive contradiction? Some of you seem so certain that the children can't lie, sort of like how those who believed in the Holly Gray case were duped into believing people with Down syndrome can't lie. You're just making up nonsense to protect your beliefs. Question 4. Do you know what a non-molestation order actually is? Believers will repeatedly refer to the past of the children's father because that's what Sabine McNeil tells them to do, and they'll cite these so-called non-molestation orders as evidence that he abused his children as part of this satanic cult. Well, first off, you do realise that a non-molestation order has nothing to do with child molesting, right? It's a civil court order designed to protect women from domestic violence. And it can be applied for even if no domestic violence has actually happened yet. Just if the woman fears that it might happen in the future. In these scenarios, the person accused, person this order's being taken out on, doesn't have to be charged or convicted of any crime. It's an emergency thing that circumvents regular justice in hope that some poor women are saved from domestic violence. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know what happened within the home, but the father has never been charged or convicted of domestic violence against Ella Draper, and he hasn't been charged or convicted with any kind of violence against his children. It wouldn't be the first time that women have abused their legal privileges during nasty breakups and custody disputes. So I hope you people actually know what one of these court orders is, and I'm also scratching my head as to how this even remotely points to a satanic cult in Hampstead. This isn't evidence of anything. The father was interviewed by police. He did concede that the breakup was messy and there was a lot of hate. But there's nothing to suggest that the children were targeted by him in any way. And using the fact that he's an actor, or he once did nude photo shoots as a model, using that against him, come on. Are people not allowed to be actors now? Are people not allowed to be models now? If you guys are in charge, what kind of world would we be living in? Number 5. Why do you ignore Abraham Christie's police record? Unlike the father, Christie has a very clear criminal record. He has offences for drugs, violence, dishonesty. The other year, he received a police caution for assaulting his own teenage son. And when the children were taken into care and were out of his reach, they claimed that he hit them with spoons, poured jugs of water over them, pushed them into walls, hit them in various ways. And it was this abusive environment that led the children to do exactly what he asked when he was coaching them to come up with these satanic stories. Multiple witnesses report that he was aggressive towards the children in public outside of the school. There's also the fact that THC was found in the children's hair, and that is the psychoactive part of the cannabis plant. Not hemp, not health food hemp, but actual cannabis. So he fed them pot. Even if you discount the children's testimony against him, when we're weighing up the balance of probabilities of who may have harmed these children, you can't ignore his past aggressiveness, his past violence towards his own son, the fact that he fed them an illegal drug and thought that was fine. What a nice bloke this guy is. Do you trust him? Do you really trust him? Is he just seeking justice against the satanic cult? Or is he himself the primary abuser here? Have some common sense. Those who were unfortunate enough to have watched the videos will have noticed the children's bruises. Considering they hadn't seen their father for months at the time, I think we can make a logical guess as to who caused them. Why are you burying your heads in the sand over this verifiable evidence that he's a violent man? Why do you ignore what's right in front of your face, but then prefer to believe some nonsensical tale of a baby-eating cult who cooked them in McDonald's? What happened to critical thought? What happened to not believing what you're told and investigating things for yourself? The only herd mentality that I see here are the gaggle of idiots running around Hampstead shouting at random people, going into an open church service and recording it, thinking, oh, maybe I'll catch them in the act. If you've got anything left firing up there in your brain, I would hope that you're feeling some form of cognitive dissonance right now, because you've got a violent abuser right there, and you'd sooner stand outside a church shouting at random people. Which is a church the police did actually search when they were investigating. But of course, there was no investigation. Question 6. How can the medical evidence be so inconclusive? Now, the believers, who for some reason like to get really graphic about the medical evidence in a really aggressive way, they seem to think if they shout the word anal, people will acquiesce and crown them the winners of the debate. But the so-called evidence they cite is completely disingenuous. What they do is point to the very first medical report by Dr. Hodes, and then ignore everything that followed. Hodes actually took her medical findings to a peer review panel of other medical professionals to ensure that her interpretations were correct. After it went through this process, they concluded that she overstated her original findings, and what was recorded mostly fell within normal variations. There is some room for interpretation there, particularly in the findings of the girl, if Hodes is correct. But let's get logical about this. If a gang of upwards of 100 or more violent Satanists were doing what is claimed in these stories, the medical evidence would be absolutely overwhelming. These children would be in pain. There would be no doubt that something had happened. But these findings are inconclusive. Medical professionals don't agree on them. Now, we can't rule out that some kind of isolated incident has taken place at some point, which has been clouded by all the extra nonsense. But the first person the police should probably investigate is violent Abraham Christie and Mother Ella Draper, not some random family going to church on Sunday. And it has since came out that Draper was treating her children with, quote, enemas. It's not clear what for, what exactly that entailed, but maybe that is an explanation for some of Dr. Hode's findings. But if these allegations were true, why is the medical evidence so inconclusive? So that's really the line in the sand for me. I've been covering this since the videos first got traction on YouTube, watching how they were shared all over social media with no caution whatsoever, no critical thought, no thought about verifying or waiting to see what else emerged, just shock and awe, just sharing all this stuff. People almost salivating over the possibility that their warped worldview might just be confirmed by these videos. Oh, David Icke was right. Look, here's more evidence. This random video that Justine sent me. It was both fascinating and quite worrying to see how the hysteria grew on Facebook and on message boards and things like that. And as soon as I came across the leaked documents from Sabine on that Google Drive, far from supporting the mother Ella Draper, it quickly became apparent that it was her partner Abraham Christie who was the violent abuser. The mother's expert agreed that some of the allegations had been proven impossible by the police investigation. She wouldn't say that Christie coached them, but in a roundabout way, she admitted that he coerced them. So it's just a game of semantics. You could tell that this expert wasn't buying it. And now that the evidence is overwhelmingly against the couple, the only thing the believers can do is call it a cover-up. You know, that's a cop-out. So let's just recap these 6 questions that I think those who believe in this case need to answer. Why do you believe fully in the allegations if, by your own admission, the police have not uncovered any evidence because in your narrative they didn't actually do an investigation? How is it possible that the children can articulate such complex and detailed stories on their own? They were coached. They don't know these words and terms and people and places and actions. Why is it you believe that the children couldn't possibly have been coerced or coached in the original videos? But when they recanted, oh, they were absolutely coached by the police. The police made them change their stories. Why is it that you focus on the father and his quote, non-molestation orders, when non-molestation orders can be applied even if no domestic violence has taken place and the father has no charges or convictions for domestic violence. Yet you completely ignore the actual criminal record of Abraham Christie that involves violence against his own son, as well as things like drug offences, dishonesty and other things. And why is it that you ignore the testimony of the children outlining how they were coached by Abraham Christie, claiming it was the police coaching them to say that they were coached? If these allegations were true, why is there so little medical evidence, and why is that evidence inconclusive to a peer review panel of medical professionals? If a gang of upwards of 100 Satanists were carrying out such heinous crimes, it would be much more obvious, wouldn't it? And I guess the final question is really rhetorical. I've had a lot of abuse hurled at me simply for rationally covering this case, saying I'm covering up for abusers. Who really is covering up for abusers? Because there's one proven abuser that you guys are ignoring. Why do you choose to promote a fantasy that Ella Draper and Abraham Christie created without even a shred of supporting evidence, when there are many other cases out there that you could be getting behind? Seems like people have forgotten about the Elm Guest House. And look, I've believed crazy shit before. I've been fooled, I've been led by talking heads in the alternative community. I've gotten hysterical over stories and wrapped up in self-righteousness. I've wanted to get out on the streets and do good things and change the world. I know what that mindset is like, but you've got it wrong. And some of you, those shouting at people outside of churches and the school, you're going down a very dark path that you're going to find very hard to get out of. Because the deeper you go, the less you're going to want to admit to yourself that you're wrong. The less you're going to want to admit to your ego that you're wrong. And you're going to find yourself further alienated from the people around you. And it's not going to end well. And don't think Belinda McKenzie and Sabine McNeil are going to be there to pick up the pieces of your life when the bottom falls out on this thing. They'll be off onto the other story. They'll be off onto the next case. They're not going to care about you. So anyway, I've been rambling enough. That was the Wide Shut webcast. I've been your host, Keelan Balderson. If you're new to the show, I mean, I haven't really been doing one regularly for a good couple of years now, probably. But you can find all of my work at wideshut.co.uk. I used to have a very active weekly show called the Wide Shut webcast. This is what it is, covering all sorts of stories. I did a full-length documentary on the 7/7 London bombings called 7/7 What Did They Know, which was well-received back in the day and was broadcast on the now-defunct, I think it's defunct, Paradigm Shift TV on Sky. But you can go on my website and watch that for free. I also did a documentary on the London riots from several years ago. Or you can just go on my YouTube and check some of the older content. I periodically remove some of it because my position's changed. Some of it's not really as accurate as I thought it was, things like that. But there is a lot of good stuff on there. My interviews with Tom Secker, all very well received. I enjoy doing all of those. Lots of great information from Tom. I interviewed some of the wrongly accused in the Holly Gregg case and helped blow the lid off that whole fraudulent story. So you might want to go back and listen to that interview. But that will wrap things up from me today. Once again, the website is wideshut.co.uk, and hopefully I'll be back again in another couple of weeks for perhaps something a little different, because this whole story is just depressing and gross and just a horrible example of people and the deranged elements of alternative media and the quote truth movement. It's not fun, it's not positive to me. So next time, hopefully we'll talk about something a little bit different on the Wide Shut webcast.